Imagine being completely paralyzed by pain right in the middle of the supermarket aisle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, or you finally make it to the doctor, they run all the scans, do all the blood tests, and then they just look at you and tell you your joints and muscles are perfectly fine.
Right, which is just incredibly frustrating.
It is. And for millions of people, this isn't some rare nightmare. It's just a regular Tuesday.
Yeah, it's a brutal reality. And we are so used to the medical world being linear. Like you break a bone, it goes in a cast, and 6 weeks later, you're sorted.
Exactly. There's a clear beginning, middle, and end.
Spot on. But chronic conditions, they just don't play by those rules at all.
No, they really don't. And that's why today's mission on this deep dive is to unpack a condition that leaves people feeling like they have quite literally no life left. We're talking about fibromyalgia syndrome, or FMS.
It's such an important topic.
It really is. And we've got a brilliant stack of sources to work through today for you. We're looking at a comprehensive 2024 update from the journal Biomedicines, a brand new randomized controlled trial from Frontiers in Psychiatry, some really visceral clinical case reports, and this is fascinating, even transcripts from full body somatic yoga sessions.
That's a huge range of data.
Yeah, we're going to pull all this together to figure out where fibromyalgia actually comes from, the mechanisms driving it, and what the evidence says about both the standard medical playbook and some highly effective alternative therapies, so you know exactly what to expect.
I'm really keen to get into this, mainly because FMS is so heavily misunderstood.
Right.
Just to get us all on the same page, fibromyalgia is a chronic, widespread pain condition.
Yeah.
But it's not just pain, you know.
No, it's heaps more than that.
Exactly. It's categorized by abnormal pain processing in the central nervous system, profound fatigue, and really severe sleep disturbances.
So it's basically as if the body's volume dial for pain and sensory input has been turned all the way up to maximum, and then the knob has just snapped right off.
That is a perfect analogy. Every minor sensation feels like a five-alarm fire.
Well, if that's the baseline, I reckon it makes sense to look at how we currently try to treat it.
Right.
Going through this 2024 biomedicines update, I noticed the standard pharmacological playbook isn't really relying on what we'd consider traditional painkillers.
No, it's not.
The FDA-approved stuff mainly revolves around SNRIs, so that's serotonin and norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors like duloxetine, and then antiepileptics like pregabalin.
Yeah, and the reason for that really comes down to the mechanism. I mean, SNRIs are typically classed as antidepressants, but in fibromyalgia, they're kind of doing double duty.
Okay, how so?
Well, they target the comorbid depression and the profound fatigue, sure. But serotonin and norepinephrine are also heavily involved in the descending pain pathways.
The descending pain
Yeah, so
pathways.
that's the system your brain uses to filter and inhibit pain signals.
Ah, gotcha. And what about the pregabalin? Because prescribing an anti-seizure medication for joint and muscle pain sounds a bit, I don't know, counterintuitive on the surface.
It does, yeah, until you look at how it works on a cellular level. In a fibromyalgia brain, you have this overabundance of excitatory neurotransmitters.
Like glutamate.
Exactly like glutamate, constantly firing off pain signals. Think of glutamate as the brain's volume up signal.
Right.
So pregabalin acts like a chemical bouncer. It binds to specific calcium channels in the central nervous system and just blocks them.
So by shutting that door, it stops the glutamate from getting through.
Spot on. It effectively turns down the dial on those hyperactive pain signals. And then, if you throw in a tricyclic antidepressant like amitriptyline at night,
Which has a heavy sedating profile, right?
exactly, then you're tackling those severe sleep disturbances too.
Okay, so you're chemically managing the brain's faulty alarm system, but what I found really revealing in this review is what it explicitly says doesn't work.
Oh.
And that's the stuff most people reach for first, Standard, over-the-counter, non-steroidal, anti-inflammatory drugs, NSAIDs like ibuprofen or paracetamol. The evidence shows they completely lack efficacy for FMS.
Which is an incredibly frustrating realization for a patient.
I can imagine. You're in absolute agony, you take an anti-inflammatory, and absolutely nothing happens.
Yeah, but mechanism-wise, it's perfectly logical. I mean, NSAIDs are designed to reduce inflammation of the peripheral site, like a swollen knee, a sprained ankle, or a cut.
Right.
But FMS isn't an inflammatory condition of the joints or tissues. The tissues themselves are generally fine.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a dysfunction of the central nervous system itself.
Right, so you're throwing back ibuprofen, but it's basically like putting a bucket under a leaky roof without ever bothering to patch the actual hole.
Exactly. The water is
Yeah.
still coming through the ceiling.
You're trying to fix a symptom at the completely wrong level. And if you're listening to this and you or someone in your family has been relying on heaps of standard painkillers for FMS, this really explains why the relief is practically non-existent.
It does. The medication is targeting a peripheral system when the problem is central.
Well, if standard meds are just buckets, how do we patch the hole?
That's the big question.
Right. To do that, we have to figure out what poked the hole in the central nervous system in the first place. And this leads us to a massive pivot in the research,
which is linking the origin of FMS directly to trauma.
Yes. This is where we shift from viewing fibromyalgia strictly as a mechanical, physical breakdown and start understanding it as a deeply intertwined mind-body condition.
Absolutely. The Frontiers in Psychiatry randomized controlled trial really grounds this in what's called the Adaptive Information Processing Model, or the AIP model.
I was reading through this AIP model, and it basically suggests that a healthy mind naturally digests and files away memories. But when you experience a severe trauma, whether that's emotional, a prolonged period of chronic stress, or even a physical injury, it just overwhelms the system.
It does. The processing breaks down, and the mind stores that memory maladaptively.
So it gets saved alongside all the raw physical sensations, the pain and the panic that you felt in that exact moment.
You've hit the nail on the head. The central nervous system essentially memorizes the trauma.
Wow.
Yeah. In fibromyalgia, the chronic pain is acting as a recurring trauma loop.
A trauma loop.
Right. Because the original distress was never fully processed and integrated into standard historical memory, the nervous system stays locked in a state of high alert.
So it constantly reproduces that pain within the neural pathways.
Exactly. Almost like a skipping record.
So you're not just coping with pain. Your body is literally replaying a distress signal. And this 2024 trial looked at breaking that trauma loop using EMDR.
Eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, yeah.
Right. They took 79 participants with FMS, split them up, and the group that received 15 sessions of EMDR alongside their usual treatment saw absolutely massive drops in their pain levels.
On the visual analog scale, yes.
Yeah, and their depression dropped. Their post-traumatic stress symptoms plummeted. Mm-hmm. And crucially, those results held strong at the one-month and three-month follow-ups.
It wasn't just a fleeting placebo effect. They achieved a sustained neurobiological change.
Hold on, though. I'm looking at this EMDR protocol, and I have to ask.
Yeah.
How on earth does moving your eye side to side while thinking about a bad memory translate to your legs and back hurting less?
It sounds wild, doesn't it?
It sounds a bit like magic, eh? What's the actual biological mechanism there?
It's a completely fair pushback because it does sound unconventional from the outside, but the core mechanism driving EMDR is bilateral stimulation.
Okay.
Usually it's guided eye movements, but it could also be alternate tapping or auditory tones.
Okay.
When you recall a traumatic memory, your amygdala, the brain's threat detection center, goes into absolute overdrive.
Right, the alarm bells are ringing.
Exactly. And the memory gets stuck in the emotional right hemisphere of the brain. You feel like the threat is happening right now.
Oh, I see.
But when you introduce that bilateral stimulation, you heavily tax the brain's working memory. It actually mimics rapid eye movement or REM sleep.
Wait, really? The sleep phase?
Yeah, which is the biological phase where the brain normally consolidates memories. So by forcing this bilateral engagement while recalling the trauma, you facilitate cortical integration.
So you are physically moving the memory from being a live, highly charged emotional and physical threat
into a standard, filed away historical memory.
Wow. So by forcing the brain to finally digest the memory properly, the amygdala stops sounding the alarm.
Exactly. The nervous system realizes it's no longer under constant threat.
Yeah.
And it literally turns down the volume on the pain dial.
You're altering the physical pain threshold.
You're treating the root cause in the central nervous system, yes.
That makes total sense. But as I kept reading through the clinical case reports, specifically the ones from practitioner Bearbel Frohlin, another kind of harsh reality set in.
Oh, the exhaustion factor.
Yeah. 15 clinical sessions of EMDR, digging up deep-seated trauma that requires a massive amount of cognitive and emotional energy.
It does.
What happens if the FMS is so severe the patient can barely even leave the house?
And that is a very common, very real scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Fibromyalgia doesn't just cause pain, it causes profound, debilitating exhaustion.
Frohlin's case reports highlight this so viscerally. Like, she describes a 79-year-old woman who routinely fainted in church on Sunday mornings.
Yes.
And another woman who would become completely paralyzed by pain right in the middle of her supermarket shopping.
Right.
Froelen points out that these patients actively avoid commitment, even therapy, because they never know if they'll actually be able to function on any given day.
When we talk about that 79-year-old fainting in church, it's vital to understand what's happening to her autonomic nervous system.
Okay, what is happening?
The chronic pain acts as a constant stressor, keeping her sympathetic nervous system, the fight-or-flight response, switched on 24/7.
So she's flooded with cortisol and adrenaline.
Exactly. Eventually, the system just gets overloaded and crashes, leading to vagal syncope or fainting. Her body is physically shutting down to force a reboot.
So if you take someone whose nervous system is already redlining to the point of fainting, and you push them into intensive trauma therapy like EMDR, it seems like that could easily backfire.
It absolutely can. It could flood their already overloaded system. They need a much gentler on-ramp to healing.
And that's where Froelen introduces EFT, or emotional freedom techniques, commonly known as tapping.
Right.
She frames it as a relaxation therapy to motivate the exhausted. So how does tapping differ, mechanism-wise, from something heavy like EMDR?
Well, EFT involves the patient lightly tapping on specific meridian points on the body, like the karate chop point on the side of the hand, points on the face, and the collarbone.
While silently or softly addressing the pain or the disturbing emotion, right?
Exactly. From a physiological standpoint, your skin is packed with mechanoreceptors.
Okay.
When you physically tap these specific points, you stimulate those receptors, which sends a tiny electrical impulse through the connective tissue.
So it's a physical signal that interrupts the stress response?
Precisely. That mechanical stimulation sends a direct calming signal to the amygdala, dampening the arousal while you are simultaneously acknowledging the distress.
Wow.
It's incredibly gentle. You aren't forcing the patient to exert physical or emotional energy they simply don't have.
And she showed that just the act of having patients fill out symptom charts, rating their pain from 1 to 10 before and after tapping,
it served as this huge psychological motivator.
Yeah. Seeing those numbers drop gave them their agency back. It acts like a gentle system reboot when the body's hardware is completely frozen.
That's a great way to put it.
You can't run a massive software update like EMDR yet, so you just do a soft reboot to get things moving.
Right.
And if you're listening and you're dealing with this level of exhaustion, I reckon it's really worth seeking out a certified practitioner to explore tapping safely.
Absolutely.
Like someone like Greg Jones, a New Zealand-based practitioner, can help guide you through the process properly. Having that skilled guide is crucial when your nervous system is fragile.
Having professional guidance ensures you're regulating the nervous system safely rather than accidentally triggering it further.
All right, so let's say the nervous system has been gently coaxed out of that freeze state via EFT tapping, or maybe they've managed to lower their pain threshold with EMDR.
Okay.
The patient is finally feeling a bit safer in their own skin. How do they physically reclaim their mobility?
Right, because these are muscles and joints that have been locked up in a defensive posture for years.
Exactly. This is where we look at moving the body again, but doing so in a way that respects the nervous system's history.
The sources provide a remarkable case report from the PMC database that illustrates this transition perfectly.
Oh, the one with the 42-year-old non-Indian woman.
Yes. She was diagnosed with both fibromyalgia and Hashimoto's thyroiditis.
And she was in a rough state when she started the program, right?
Pretty rough.
She arrived for a 9-month yoga therapy program, and she could only walk using a walker or a stick. She had severe difficulty walking, widespread joint pain, sleep disturbances, just a complete loss of physical autonomy.
She was dealing with massive muscle fatigue and general loss of balance, yes.
Now, 9 months is a serious commitment. Looking at the protocol, it was rigorous.
Extremely.
1 hour of specific yoga therapy a day, 6 days a week, supervised by experts. But the thing that really stood out to me was that they completely stripped away her allopathic pain medications during this period.
They did.
That seems like a massive risk for someone who can barely walk.
It was a significant clinical decision, yeah. But it forced a complete reliance on the somatic practice to manage the pain.
And did it work?
The outcomes completely validate that approach. They measured everything from hand steadiness to grip strength to hamstring flexibility.
Oh.
By the 6th and 9th months, her muscle fatigue had dropped dramatically. Her back and leg strength nearly doubled.
That's incredible.
And the most profound result. By the end of the 9 months, she was walking completely unassisted and performing her daily activities independently.
Going from a walker to independent movement without new medications is huge.
It really is.
But, you know, when people hear yoga therapy, I think a lot of us picture complex headstands, or twisting yourself into a pretzel in a hot room.
Right, which sounds awful if you're in pain.
Exactly. To understand what this actually looks like for a beginner with FMS, I dug into the transcript we have from Brett Larkin's somatic yoga practice.
Ah, yes.
And it is heavily focused on somatic healing, which means it's all about the internal perception of the body rather than how the pose looks from the outside.
That's the core distinction. Somatic movement isn't about external performance. It's about internal safety.
But I've got to be honest, looking at some of these instructions,
yeah.
I reckon someone listening might feel a bit silly doing this in their lounge.
I can see that.
It asks you to lean back and make loud vowel sounds like A-E-O-U while rocking side to side,
yeah.
Then wagging your jaw around,
yeah.
Doing these tiger claws with your hands while doing a forcible O-shaped exhale out of your mouth.
It sounds a bit out there.
It does.
Yeah.
What is the actual scientific value here? Why the sounds and the claw hands?
Well, it sounds totally bizarre if you used to traditional fitness, but every single one of those actions is deeply rooted in neurophysiology.
Okay, break it down for me.
Let's take the vowel sounds and the jaw wagging.
Mm-hmm.
When you have fibromyalgia, your body is trapped in a defensive state. The vagus nerve, which is the main superhighway of your parasympathetic nervous system, runs right through your vocal cords and your jaw.
Oh, so by making the specific A-E-O-U sounds out loud?
You're literally vibrating the nerve.
You are physically massaging the vagus nerve.
Exactly. Stimulating it like that is the fastest biological way to signal to your brain that you're safe.
Wow.
It acts as a physiological override, shifting you out of fight or flight and into rest and digest.
Now that is a brilliant biological hack. And what about the tiger claws and the forceful exhales?
That is about the physical release of suppressed aggression and emotional constriction.
Ah, because FMS patients often have years of unprocessed frustration trapped in their bodies.
Sometimes decades of it trapped in their physical tissues. The forceful O-shaped exhales, or what the transcript calls woodchoppers with forced nasal exhales, actively engage the core.
Like a physical pump.
Exactly. It acts as a mechanical pump for the lymphatic system. It helps with lymphatic drainage, moving stagnant fluid and metabolic waste out of the tissues.
So it's literally flushing the system.
Yes. Furthermore, the vigorous shaking of the limbs, which is also detailed in the transcript, helps discharge excess adrenaline from the nervous system.
Like how an animal shakes.
Spot on. Think about how a dog shakes itself off vigorously after a stressful encounter with another dog. It's a natural somatic release of pent-up kinetic energy.
Right.
By doing these movements, you are actively rewiring the brain to feel safe experiencing physical sensation again without instantly labeling it as a threat.
It makes you realize it's not just about stretching tight hamstrings. It's literally wringing out the nervous system and teaching it a new baseline. You are reclaiming the body.
Exactly.
All right, let's pull all of this together because we've covered heaps of ground today.
We really have.
We started by looking at the standard medical playbook, understanding that while medications like SNRIs and pregabalin have their place in turning down the volume of the pain via the central nervous system,
standard anti-inflammatories are effectively useless because FMS isn't a peripheral joint issue.
Right. And from there, we looked at the root cause. We explored the AIP model and the evidence that chronic widespread pain is often an expression of maladaptively stored trauma.
Looping endlessly in the nervous system.
Exactly. We saw the evidence that reprogramming the brain with EMDR can drastically lower those pain scores by finally digesting that trauma.
But we also recognize the reality of profound exhaustion.
Right. If a patient's system is too frozen or fragile, we have incredibly gentle physiological tools like EFT tapping to safely reboot the mind-body connection, ideally with the help of a certified practitioner.
Spot on.
And finally, we saw how somatic yoga using vagal nerve stimulation and lymphatic pumping can be used to literally reclaim physical space, release trapped tension, and teach the body that it is finally safe to move again.
The overarching takeaway here is that fibromyalgia demands a complete paradigm shift.
It really does.
It isn't just a physical breakdown. It is a deeply intertwined mind-body condition that requires a multi-pronged approach.
Yeah.
It's about treating the nervous system with profound respect rather than just trying to bludgeon the pain into submission with chemicals.
It completely changes how you look at the human body. And it brings us to a final thought for you to take away and mull over after this deep dive.
If conditions like fibromyalgia are so heavily linked to how our bodies store unprocessed stress and trauma.
Yeah.
What if chronic pain isn't a malfunction of the body at all?
Wow, okay.
What if instead it's a perfectly functioning alarm system, begging us to finally stop, pay attention, and process the emotional weight we've been carrying for years.
Man, that is a thought that really lingers. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We hope it's given you a completely new lens through which to view chronic pain, trauma, and healing. Keep learning, stay curious, and take care of your nervous system. We'll catch you on the next one.